Hamas political leader issues a strong warning to Israel, saying that the Palestinian resistance will not tolerate the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Moscow displaying the no-entry sign to almost 1,000 prominent Americans, including President Biden, reciprocating similar moves by Washington. Australia's incoming Prime Minister pledges fresh relations with the world following elections that ended conservative rule after almost a decade. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says that there will be no let-up in Palestinians' resistance against the Tel Aviv regime. Hamas's political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh made a comment in a televised speech on the anniversary of a retaliatory Palestinian operation called Al-Quds Sword. He said the operation targeted the Israeli regime's security. He added that the operation was not limited to specific geographical territory, but was a strategic battle whose ramifications spilled over across the world. He also warned Tel Aviv against desecrating the Al-Aqsa Mosque, adding that Palestinians will not tolerate any such sacrilegious move. Meantime, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a funeral for a 17-year-old killed by Israeli forces. Mourners condemned Tel Aviv for his crimes. The victim, identified as Amjad Al-Fayyad, was shot dead during a raid on Jenin refugee camp. Another teenager was also critically wounded. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shatai has condemned Fayyad's killing, stressing that the international community should hold Israel accountable for its acts. The incident came days after the Israeli military killed Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akla while she was covering a regime raid on the refugee camp. In recent months, Jenin has been at the center of tensions in the occupied territories. Now, correspondent Ramallah Monacandil says that most victims of the Israeli attacks in the occupied West Bank recently are teenagers.
Since the beginning of this year, 20 Palestinians were killed only in Jenin. Some four of them are under the age of 18. This Palestinian who was shot dead this morning, Amjad Al-Fayyad, he's only 17 years old, and even less than this. His friend, 18 years old, was seriously wounded during this Israeli military operation to Jenin. We can say that many of the Palestinian youths and Palestinian young men continue to be engaged in the different forms of resistance. And maybe in the last few months, we are witnessing more Palestinians are holding arms, trying to prevent the fully armed Israeli soldiers with their armored vehicles and tanks from raiding Jenin refugee camp. According to witnesses and according to Palestinian paramedics in the Jenin refugee camp, Amjad Fayyad was shot by almost a dozen rounds in his upper part.
The British Home Secretary Priti Patel has branded the anti-Israel boycott, divestment and sanctions movement racist and anti-Semitic. The comment was made during a recent speech at a pro-Israel lobby group meeting, where she additionally reaffirmed her loyalty in defending Israel. Robert Carter reports.
Outrage has spread across the pro-Palestine community this week after British Home Secretary Priti Patel branded the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement racist and anti-Semitic. The controversial comments were issued on Monday at a Conservative Friends of Israel lobby group event.
The BDS movement, everything we have seen around the BDS movement is racist. The anti-Semitic troops, the cartoons, the chants.
Founded in 2005, the BDS movement is a Palestinian-led campaign promoting boycott and economic sanctions against Israel. After a notable rise in popularity and success in recent years, the British establishment has acted to essentially criminalise the practice. In response to Patel's comments, onlookers have pointed out her own policies and praise of Israel's ambassador as blatant hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy of Priti Patel calling anyone or anything racist on one hand, whilst openly gushing for Tzipi Hotovli on the other. I mean, Tzipi is an out-and-out anti-Arab racist. She thinks that Jews and Arabs should have no relationships at all. She also thinks that the Nakba, the expulsion of 700,000 Palestinians at the birth of Israel, she thinks that was a myth. Secondly, Priti Patel herself, her comments against Black Lives Matter, against English footballers who took the knee against in solidarity against racism, and also the laws that she's brought into place, like the Nationality and Borders Act. These comments, these laws, they've further, deeper structuralized racism into British society.
In addition to the anti-BDS remarks, Patel laid bare her so-called unflinching support to Israel. This comes just days after the shock killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akhila by Israeli regime forces, making it appear that no matter what crimes are being committed, Tel Aviv can rely on unwavering support from the British Home Office. Robert Carter, London.
Moscow has blacklisted some 960 U.S. citizens in response to Western sanctions. Leading Americans on the foreign ministry's list include President Biden, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, and Hollywood actor Morgan Freeman. The individuals are banned from entry to Russia indefinitely. The ministry says that sanctions are necessary to counter the U.S. attempts to establish, quote, a neocolonial world order on the rest of the planet. Moscow has already blacklisted State Secretary Antony Blinken and Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin. Russia, however, says it remains open to honest dialogue and that it draws a line between the American people and authorities, inciting Russophobia. The Ukrainian president believes that there is only one way to resolve the conflict with Russia, and that's diplomacy. Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukraine did not start a conflict, but it has to finish it. According to him, even though Ukraine can be victorious on the battlefield, a breakthrough will only be reached at the negotiating table. One of his aides also said that there is no way that Ukraine would agree to a ceasefire or accept any deal with Moscow that involves surrendering territory. Mykhailo Podolyak, who is also Ukraine's lead negotiator, says that making concessions would backfire, and that's because Russia would hit back harder after any break in fighting. The negotiations are currently deadlocked, with both sides accusing each other of stalling the process. In an exclusive report, our correspondent in Ukraine, Jana Miller, has investigated the alleged single most deadly war crime of the conflict so far.
The drama theater of Mariupol. It is the scene of the alleged single most deadly war crime so far in this brutal conflict. Depending on who you believe, it was either a Russian airstrike or done by the Ukrainians to blame it on Russia. The words children are still scrawled on the pavement outside, written in order to ward off a Russian strike. This man worked at the theater.
I talked to emergency workers a week ago. Our fire brigade is over there, and they told me they found two more dead bodies.
He breaks down and walks away, unnecessarily ashamed of his tears.
I lost everything. What is left for me here? I have worked here all my life.
This is the second time that I've been here in the last few days. Since the last time, there's a little bit more rubble being cleared up. Interestingly, you can just walk straight in, even though it's a crime scene or a former crime scene, and still a site where it's still pretty dangerous in places. But you can walk straight in. It's that easy. But finding out just what happened here is a little harder. At the very least, I wanted to find out just how many people had died here. Estimates range from around 30 to over 600. A workman took me down to the basement. He told me his team had only recovered three bodies from the rubble. He also grumbled that they could have worked much faster if they hadn't been ordered to remove brick by brick due to, as he called them, fake stories about hundreds underneath. Some eyewitnesses and previous media reports say that there were over 100 outside the theater at a field kitchen. None survived, they said.
We thought there would be between 500 to 1,000 dead. There are three floors, but only 20 bodies were dug out, which means the others were led out from the theater. Outside, beside the kitchen, there were 15 bodies, thank God.
Witnesses say there was 100 people outside at a food shelter, and they were all killed. Is that what you saw?
No, they only found 20 inside the basement and 15 outside. That's all. We thought that there were 1,000 dead, and we were going around these ruins shouting if there was anyone alive still. There were arms and legs. It's difficult to put it into words.
Alexander also finds it hard to hold back the tears. If this was a Russian strike, it would still constitute a war crime. But have the figures been exaggerated to cause greater uproar?
Behind me, there's a famous Russian journalist and TV personality. I've spoken to them. They are unsurprisingly very clear that this was a Ukrainian strike to blame on the Russians. But there isn't just a battle on the ground here in Ukraine. There's also a propaganda war as Russia seeks to justify its invasion, and NATO and Ukraine seek to make Russia out to be committing heinous war crimes.
At the nearest hospital, I speak to a medic who was working at the time of the explosion.
Maybe it was a strike from the air. According to another account, it was mined and detonated. I cannot say for sure. It's not clear.
Why couldn't you get to the theater as an ambulance driver?
At that time, the Russian military didn't let us go to the theater. There were battles going on nearby.
If Alexander's testimony is to be believed, and if the workmen are correct about there being few bodies in the rubble, then did the Russians take away hundreds of bodies in the hours after the explosion, in which they took control of the area and before the morning? Possibly. In an honest world, an independent investigation would be carried out to find out what happened and how many people died. But for now, as the war continues to rage, that seems unlikely. As they say, history is written by the winners. Johnny Miller, Mariupol.
Italy has increased its imports of Russian crude despite efforts by the European Union to reduce dependence on Russian energy. Russia has exported around 450,000 barrels per day of crude to Italy this month. That's more than four times as much as in February, and the highest since 2013. Two-thirds of those exports are destined for a port in Sicily, where a Russian-controlled refinery is located. Lenders have stopped financing the refinery after the EU imposed sanctions on Moscow over Ukraine. This has forced the refinery, which is owned by Moscow-based corporation Lukoil, to rely solely on supplies from its parent company. The growing crude shipments to Russian-owned refineries in the EU come as the bloc is working on ways to wean itself off Russian fossil fuels. As the war in Ukraine continues, the West is taking measures spearheaded by the U.S. that would add more fuel to burning flames, and that's particularly concerning given the devastating toll the conflict is taking on the global economy. And this begs the question, are we looking at a prolonged war in Europe? And if so, what would it mean for the rest of the world?
On Thursday, leaders of Sweden and Finland, two European nations that opted for neutrality for years, flanked U.S. President Joe Biden while he threw his support behind their bid to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, at the White House.
And today I'm proud to assure them that they have the full, total, complete backing of the United States of America. Today, my administration is submitting to the United States Congress reports on NATO accession for both countries so the Senate can efficiently and quickly move on advising and consenting to the treaty.
I don't think those nations really ought to be scared of Russia. That would be really stupid if they were. Maybe they are that foolish and believe the narrative going on. I think it's more there's a power play. I mean, you look at the sanctions, that's where you really see the intent. And President Biden said this in Poland. He said, we intend that Russia's economy will be half of what it was over years. So that reveals he's planning to continue this for years. Zelensky, even if he were inclined to negotiate, will not be allowed to do it. And I think there's an intent to force governments to pick sides.
The move comes amid objections by Turkey, a NATO ally, and warnings by Russia. Ankara opposes Finland's and Sweden's accession to the military alliance, citing their longtime support for groups Turkey deems terrorists. Moscow, however, has warned of retaliation if Finland, a country that shares a 1,340-kilometer-long border with Russia, joins NATO. Russia's deputy UN representative, Dmitry Polyansky, went so far as to say that the two nations could turn into potential targets for Russia if they become NATO members. Finland and Sweden say they decided to join the NATO and reverse decades of military alignment after Russia attacked Ukraine. But Russia considers NATO's eastward expansion a threat to its national security. The issue was a critical reason Russian officials say pushed Moscow to launch its military operation in Ukraine in February.
Australia making a transition from a conservative rule to a Labour government, with the incoming Prime Minister pledging fresh relations with the world and a transformation of climate policies. Anthony Albanese says that he wants to make Australia greener and less hawkish. The Labour leader has called his upcoming summit with the Japanese, Indian and U.S. leaders an absolute priority. Climate is expected to be at the heart of those talks. Albanese and his government are expected to be sworn in on Monday after Labour winning a parliamentary majority in general elections. He may still need a coalition partner to rule, but he has indicated that they'll be picked from like-minded independents. The Labour victory ends nearly a decade of conservative rule in Australia, which is now associated with climate disasters such as burning forests and a smog-enveloped cities. Heavy rains have caused widespread flooding in parts of Bangladesh and India, leaving millions stranded and nearly 60 people dead. In Bangladesh, some 2 million people have been marooned by the worst flood in the country's northeast in nearly two decades. At least 100 villages were inundated after flood water rushing from India breached a major embankment on a river. 10 people have been killed in Bangladesh and nearly 50 in India. Many parts of Bangladesh and neighboring regions in India are prone to flooding. Experts warning that climate change is increasing the likelihood of extreme weather events around the world. Well, that's all we had for you for this news hour from Tehran.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 29, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of Quds Day. In the first part of this speech, Imam Khamenei expressed his gratitude for the Iranian nation for their participation in Quds Day. Even though the Zionist regime is out of breath, it continues to commit crimes and kill innocent people with its weapons. It murders unarmed women, children, the elderly and the youth. It imprisons and tortures them, destroys houses and demolishes farms and property. The liars in European and the US who make extravagant claims about human rights and who created a commotion on the issue of Ukraine keep totally silent in the face of all these crimes in Palestine. Not only do they not defend the innocent people, they also help that bloodthirsty wolf. This is an important lesson regarding the issue of the world of Islam, at the top of which stands the issue of Palestine. We cannot and must not rely on these racist, hostile powers. Only with a power that comes from resistance, which originates in the teachings of the Quran and which arises from the religious rulings of Dear Islam, can one resolve the issue of the world of Islam and the issue of Palestine, which stands at the top of all Islamic issues?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The formation of the resistance in West Asia has been the most blessed phenomenon in this region in recent decades. It was the magnificence of the resistance that was able to cleanse the occupied territories of Lebanon of the pollution of the Zionists, pull Iraq out from the clutches of the U.S., save Iraq from the maliciousness of the Daesh, ISIS, and assist Syrian defenders in the face of the U.S. schemes. The resistance fights against international terrorism helps the resistant people of Yemen in the war that has been imposed on them, wrestles with the Zionist usurpers in Palestine, and will bring them to their knees with God's grace. It also highlights the issue of Quds and Palestine more and more for the people of the world to see on a daily basis. You people of Palestine, you self-sacrificing youth in the West Bank and in the 1948 lands, you who are struggling for God in the Jenin refugee camp, and you, the residents in the Palestinian camps outside of Palestine, are important, sensitive parts and pioneers of the resistance.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Tensions between Russia and Israel appear to be on the rise. Israeli media reports say Russian forces have opened fire on Israeli jets with advanced S-300 anti-aircraft missiles. The missiles were fired at Israeli warplanes after they attacked targets in northwestern Syria. The move is seen as a sign of significant shift in Moscow's attitude toward Israel. The unprecedented incident is said to have occurred on Friday night when Israeli jets targeted an area near the city of Masyaf, which killed several people. Israel's airstrikes on targets in Syria are countered by the country's anti-aircraft missile batteries. But this time, however, the S-300 batteries also opened fire as the jets were departing the area.
It is the case that these missiles, the S-300 battery, is operated by Russian military personnel, and that they would not have fired without permission from senior commanders. Okay, this is a break in the normal procedure.
Syria's S-300 batteries are operated by Russian military and cannot be fired without their approval. Israeli media reports claim the S-300 radar did not manage to lock onto the Israeli jets and thus did not present a serious threat to the fighter jets. But this would mark the first use of the S-300s against the Israeli warplanes over Syria. It's not clear whether the S-300 missile fire was a one-time event or if it was a Russian signal to Israel that it was changing its policy.
So this was the first use of it, and it was known to be done by Russian military personnel at Russian military command. But it also, they did not lock the radar on the planes. So the planes were never in danger. It's unclear from the reports whether they couldn't lock the radar on the planes or whether they just didn't lock them and just wanted to throw these missiles up there as a kind of signal and a warning to Israel that, you know, we may change our policy and we may take down some planes.
The development comes amid deteriorating relations between Tel Aviv and Moscow over Ukraine. Israel has backed Ukraine after the war began. Tel Aviv's stance has angered Russia. Russia's latest move against Israel would be a worrying development for Israel.
And that has to do, of course, with the whole reverberations of what's going on with Ukraine. And, you know, the Russians are realizing that and starting to act much more militantly in the sense that they understand this is now a war for the future of a lot of things.
The Tel Aviv regime has repeatedly targeted the positions of the Syrian army and its allies, but has rarely acknowledged or discussed such operations. The aerial bombardment intensified in scale and frequency after 2011, when the Arab country found itself in the grip of foreign-backed militancy and terrorism.
Oh, it will continue. No question about it. Look, it's not going to even think about stopping until a plane goes down. If S-300s or some other effective anti-aircraft defense takes down Israeli planes, then there'll be a problem. So the Russians have signaled something here, and they didn't take down a plane. And until and unless they do, Israel's not going to change its policy on that at all. And even if they do, that would cause a problem for Israel, and they would have to think twice about it.
Damascus says Tel Aviv carries out attacks on the Arab country to aid terrorist groups against the Syrian army. It has repeatedly complained to the United Nations, calling the aggression a blatant violation of the country's sovereignty and international law. The development comes after warmongering rhetoric of Israeli officials against Iran and its allies. Just recently, Israel's Minister of Military Affairs, Benny Gantz, said Tel Aviv would prevent Iran from transferring advanced capabilities to its allies in the region. But Iran has dismissed the threat, saying it's determined to help the resistance axis stand up against Israel's aggressive moves in the region.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has visited Albania. Officially, the trip was meant to celebrate the centenary of U.S.-Albania diplomatic relations. But Pompeo's stance against Iran manifested itself after he went to the camp of a notorious terrorist cult there. Pompeo held a meeting with the leaders of the Mujahideen-e Khalq, or MKO, terrorist cult. Encouraged by the presence of terrorists there, Pompeo repeated his anti-Iran rant, expressing his long, unfulfilled wish to see the Islamic Republic overthrown. The former CIA chief said that under the leadership of infamous Maryam Rajavi, the MKO has been laying the groundwork for what he called a, quote, free, sovereign, democratic republic of Iran.
The recent visit of Mike Pompeo to Albania is in a way a revitalization of the old connections that Mike Pompeo has with Israeli Mossad and the Iranian Mujahideens, who are terrorists.
Pompeo is not part of the current U.S. administration, but his rhetoric and deeds indeed reflect the deep-seated animosity of the U.S. establishment towards Iran and its government. During his tenure as the U.S. Secretary of State between 2018 and 2021 in the Trump administration, Pompeo and other belligerent politicians around him, most notably former National Security Advisor John Bolton, expressed an open secret regarding Washington's stance towards MKO terrorist cult. Pompeo and his team became the MKO sponsors in his delusional attempt to overthrow the Islamic Republic. Back then, the regime in Washington left no stone unturned to topple Iran, but failed miserably in their hysteric anti-Iran drive.
Pompeo was paid probably more than $150,000 for his visit to the Mujahideen camp.
Mujahideen e Khalq is a terrorist cult which is now based at a camp in Albania. The MKO regularly hosts big events in which top American and European officials make speeches in support of the group.
They run a paramilitary camp in the town of Manza in the region of Durrës in Albania. From Manza, the Mujahideens, they carry hostile and terrorist activities against Iran, but even against political Islam in general.
Former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton, former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman, and former Director of Saudi Arabia's intelligence agency, Turki bin Faisal Al Saud, are amongst the top officials that have attended the group's events. The terrorist cult has been accused of being involved in various criminal activities in Europe, including human trafficking, with possible links to the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group. The MKO was formally designated as a terrorist group around the world, but the United States and the Europeans delisted it in recent years amid growing strains in ties with Tehran. The terrorist group also fought alongside Iraqi forces in the former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein's war on Iran in the 1980s. Prior to that, it killed thousands of ordinary Iranians and officials, the number said to be in the tens of thousands. Support for anti-Iran terrorist groups in the US and Europe has remarkably grown in the Western countries, with many Western spy agencies actively involved in aiding and arming them.
Well, the US government has a long history of cooperating with terrorist organizations. Nowadays, we have many countries in the Middle East who complain from the US support for different terrorist groups.
The Islamic Republic has already warned Europeans that their support for the MKO will be costly for them. Tehran has condemned the hosting of the group by Albania and is delisting by the US and Europe.
On Saturday, a gunman attacked a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, killing 10 people and injuring 3 others. Most of the victims were African American, making the attack one of the deadliest racially charged mass shootings in the United States' recent history. According to the police, the detained suspect, identified as 18-year-old Peyton Gendron, drove over 200 miles to carry out the attack. The law enforcement also said they were reviewing a 180-page document published online detailing the gunman's motivations. In the so-called manifesto, the author describes himself as a white supremacist concerned about, quote, the dwindling white population. The document also says that he chose the area for the attack as its zip code has a large black population, which was within the driving distance of where he lived.
The inability of the unsustainability of neoliberal capitalism. So there's less resources, there's scarcity, there's a job market is being affected. Everyone is affected by that, but their interpretation of what the problem is different. And for white extremists, white supremacist extremists, they blame immigrants, they blame black people, they blame. And so you're seeing these ideologies that are emerging, or mentalities, or not emerging. They've always existed, but they're responding to the intensification of the logical conclusions of neoliberalism and neoliberal capitalism, austerity, joblessness, you know, privatization, all of that.
The police are investigating the attack as a hate crime, as an act of racially motivated violent extremism. The teenager faces first-degree murder, a charge he has pleaded not guilty to. Among the victims were a father who was buying a birthday cake for his 3-year-old son and Catherine Massey, a 72-year-old woman who was known for her civil rights advocacy. The tragic irony is that almost a year ago, she had written a letter to a local newspaper calling for stricter gun control measures. The Buffalo mass shooter managed to live stream his attack on a popular streaming service using camera gear mounted on his military helmet. Although the feed was taken down soon after it began, the issue reignited criticisms about the moderation of social media platforms. It bore striking similarities with the 2019 terrorist attack on two mosques in the city of Christchurch in New Zealand that killed 51 people. That attack was also streamed live on social media. The incident in Buffalo is considered the deadliest mass shooting in the U.S. so far this year. But some 200 other mass shootings were carried out since the beginning of January. Unofficial data suggests that over 320 people are shot in the U.S. every day. A recent report by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that gun violence in the country rose dramatically in 2020, with homicides involving firearms surging by 35%, the highest level in 25 years. The report points to disparities in the rates of homicide based on race, ethnicity, and poverty. The study fails to single out the specific reason for such inequality, but cites the COVID-19 pandemic as a possible socioeconomic driving factor.
People having to seek their own interpretations of what's happening. We're seeing it like things like this shooting, and this is not the only shooting. There's other things that are happening where people are acting out, trying to figure out, you know, just acting out, reactionary, most extreme reactionary responses to what's happening. And it can only get worse. As long as capitalism and white supremacy and patriarchy are the rule of the day in the United States, they can't address the fundamental human needs of people, then things like this will get worse. And then as the media glosses over it and doesn't want to tell people the truth, they can only get worse.
Tragic incidents like these are a grim reminder of the need for tighter gun control laws that would prevent easy access to firearms and reforms that would rid the U.S. society of racial and ethnic biases.
Okinawa, a Japanese island in the western Pacific Ocean. The island was the scene of one of the fiercest battles of the Pacific War. It has marked the 50th anniversary of the end of U.S. occupation and its return to Japanese sovereignty after 27 years of U.S. rule. Okinawa returned to Japan on May 15, 1972. However, the island chain still hosts the majority of American military bases in Japan. It harbors about 70% of the U.S.'s military bases in Japan and more than half of its 47,000 troops. Many Japanese people, particularly Okinawans, are against the continued heavy American military presence and are protesting to draw attention to the issue.
Far from being reduced as people in Okinawa demand, the U.S. military bases have even been strengthened instead. We hope the rally will help people in the prefecture and in other places realize the seriousness of the issue.
The presence of U.S. troops in Japan is not in any way intended to protect Japanese citizens, but a part of U.S. military strategy. Frequent incidents caused and crimes committed by U.S. troops in Japan only make Okinawa more dangerous.
Hundreds of protesters from across Japan have staged rallies in Okinawa demanding a reduction of U.S. military forces in the prefecture. In the city of Naha, more than 1,000 people from Tokyo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, as well as Okinawa held an indoor gathering to call for peace and to oppose U.S. bases. Japanese locals on Okinawa have already been expressing serious opposition to the presence of U.S. forces on the island. A poll by the Asahi Shimbun newspaper and Okinawan media organizations found that 61% of local people wanted fewer U.S. bases on the island, while only 19% said they were happy with the status quo. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, who promised to make a greater effort to reduce hosting U.S. military bases in the region, also acknowledged the issue as well as the economic inequalities that still make Okinawa one of the country's poorest areas.
50 years have passed since Okinawa's reversion to Japan, and the people of Okinawa still bear a heavy burden from the U.S. bases. The government takes this very seriously and will continue to do the utmost to reduce the burden from the bases.
A string of tropical islands located off far southwest Japan, Okinawa, has suffered massive devastation in World War II. Fierce battles between Japanese and American forces left as many as one-third of its people dead. Then around 30 years of U.S. rule followed. And Japan has not forgotten those days. Despite their opposition to U.S. troop presence, Okinawans are more concerned about the threat of a military confrontation involving China. Okinawa is closer to Taiwan than the capital, Tokyo. This could turn it into a target to be the front line in case of a conflict between the U.S. and China. Beijing considers Taiwan as its territory and views U.S. military provocations as a sign of support for those inside Taiwan who seek independence. American warships periodically carry out voyages through the strategic Taiwan Strait, drawing angry responses from China. The U.S. is also the island's key backer and main arms supplier. Tensions in Okinawa are likely to rise further given that lawmakers in the ruling Liberal Democratic Party have said that they want a commitment to more defense spending, including missiles that can hit targets on foreign soil, missiles that could be deployed on Okinawa.
The United States uses its force and uses its bullying tactics to impose its will on other countries. So I don't know that in the minds of the Japanese government that they are really able to operate as totally sovereign, independent entities when it comes to going against the interests of the United States.
Considering the latest developments, Okinawa could soon find itself in the middle of another conflict, one that is reminiscent of a dark point in its history. And this time again, Washington plays a role in it.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Very warm welcome to the program Islamic Upbringing. This is your host Zainab. I hope wherever you are, you're fine, you're doing well. And in case you have any problems, you're not doing well. In this holy land, we always pray for your well-being, inshallah. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we come up with the issues, the problems, the questions that parents have about the upbringing of their children. Well, the answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations from the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. We have in studio with us our guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalafan. Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
It's my pleasure.
I want to start today's session with a question. I'm a young boy of age 16. It is sad to say that I have noticed many Muslims are so backward in many ways. Why this downfall in culture, civilization, education, manners, and etiquette? When confronted with my schoolmates, I get this feeling that my friends look at me in this manner, and I feel this way too. Is it really true? How can I confront them?
This is a very challenging question, because we see these kind of situations in the West.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking down upon Muslims and everything. So it's a question that is worth a lot of attention. And in fact, you know, a lot of articles and books should be written about this kind of ways to confront, you know, your religion. By having respect of this divine religion.
Exactly.
Because it's such a divine religion that it can give you so much respect. Yet if you yourself have a complex, then it could even be the downfall. You know,
all
of
right.
Your, because of yourself, though.
Because
Islam
of your
will
own
remain
complex.
Sublime.
Yeah.
So you must keep note of the fact that once upon a time, the Muslims were ruling over many cultured nations and they were the leaders of the caravan of civilization. So it
all
doesn't
right.
mean that there was always a downfall. No. Now they've become developed, you know, dependent on developed nations. Okay?
Yeah.
But they, if they would want to, they would still rise very high.
Yeah.
Okay? There are many factors, actually. The basic reason of the advancement of the Muslims is nothing but Islamic knowledge. And the cause of their backwardness is aloof from the teachings of Islam. To stay aloof from the teachings of Islam.
Yeah.
So Islamic knowledge gives that sublimity. And that respect and honor.
Mm-hmm.
But to remain aloof from the Islamic knowledge, that will cause the downfall of Islam. To apply the Islamic knowledge will give you that station of highness. To not apply and leave it behind will give you the downfall, that complex, that people looking down on you, that people disrespecting you, that Islamophobia, you know, the fear
yeah.
that you are Islam and you don't want to mention it.
But it has become quite challenging today, like the media is making propaganda in such a way, like even showing Muslim women with hijab as the most backward ones, the most oppressed ones. And as such, when we are living in such a society, when we are living in such a world, wherein tech from all the ways is, you know, persuading the fact that Muslim women are quite backward, especially women are with hijab are quite backward. They cannot make advancement in the fields. But you said rightly, like we should look back into the history,
yeah.
look at the advancements the Muslims have made, like the who developed algebra
yeah.
and other things. Like Muslims have done great in chemistry, in the fields of physics, in the fields of eye. We had great eye surgeons. Among Muslims, and we still have so many great Muslim. Like if I start talking on that, that will be a different session. Well, the first point you said we should keep in mind is that we need to have a look at the history of the development of Muslims, and also the fact that we should increase our knowledge towards Islam. Islam was
exactly.
never backward. Islam is never downfall kind of thing. Sister, I'll be talking to you further on this note. Here we need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and we are discussing very important issue today. We had a question from a 16-year-old boy who said that noticing Muslims in the West, his friends feel that he's backward in terms of education, manner, and etiquettes or civilization, and how should he feel? Is that really true?
And of course, we said it's not true. It's his lack of knowledge, and Muslims were advanced once upon a time. But why did this downfall happen?
All of a sudden.
Yeah. It's because of that spirit of sacrifice did not remain. And this requires the, you know, like the fighting with the nafs. Muslims have become geographical Muslims. They're not Muslims by the real meaning of, you know, submitting to the law of Allah. Islam means what? Submission to the will of Allah, right? So the spirit of sacrifice has lost its value. The Muslims of the early period of Islam were ready to give all kinds of sacrifices. In their view, the religion of Islam and its commands was very respectable, you know. And more than also his family, his wealth, his property. They used to uphold the principles of the religion first. And that's why they could take part in battles. They could give away their lives. And we see when this revolution also in Iran happened, this kind of threw the rays of that advancement, that the spirit of sacrifice was born again, such that Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, said that my soldiers are still in their cradles.
All right.
And they'll grow up to be the soldiers who will defend Islam and live up to the revolution and create this revolution. Help me in making this big change.
All right.
So this requires the spirit of sacrifice. Yeah.
All right.
So in the long time, they used to sacrifice all their material possessions on Islam. And the history of Islam, especially the battles fought by the Messenger of Allah, are living examples of this. But now many people, you know, have left religion on one side. They become secular. The religion is just meant to practice at home and all maybe right. In our communities, a small community.
That's secular in
not
the society.
Not at large. Yeah. Not that thirst to want everybody to change, one and all.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, for my relatives and for myself, and, you know, I'm enough, you know, for Allah, disregarding the fact that Allah wants you to spread this far and wide.
All right.
So the spirit of sacrifice, self-sacrifice grows.
Mm-hmm.
Then you think of the people suffering. Then you feel that what to do to make it a better place for them.
All right.
You see? So there are live testimonies from the Messenger of Allah of how people have left religion on one side, not left the religion on one side, and the spirit of sacrifice has grown in them.
All right.
You know, because of the religion, the spirit of sacrifice has grown. For some people, you know, Islam is sacred only to the limit that it is not a hurdle to their wealth and their position. On the other hand, there would be very few people who would refrain from something profitable just on the basis of religious law, you know.
All right.
They would feel that, you know, religious law dictates us this, but it's not profitable for us. So they would really, you know, hold up to it.
Yeah.
Because of what? The lacking of self-sacrifice. It requires a person to uphold this self-sacrifice. And that's how you will soar towards that perfection, towards that advancement, towards that civilization. So what has a youth got to know about this? He has to be educated on this.
All right.
He has to not have a complex on this.
Yeah.
That I'm low, I'm nothing. No, he has to see his history, read about the history of Islam, how it came to be brought about.
Increase his knowledge, actually.
Yes, yes.
I'll be talking to you, Sister Khalifan. Here, we need to take another break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam said, wear clothes and beautify yourselves. For indeed Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is beauty and He loves beautification.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. I have Sister Khalafan with me, who is talking on the topic that why are Muslims concerned backward in many Western societies? So, Sister, you talked about so many points. You remind me of a hadith from the noble Imam, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, says that be a source of attraction for us. Do not be a kind of thing for us that people say what kind of religion he comes in from. As you rightly said, we need to increase our Islamic knowledge. As the more we increase our Islamic knowledge, like Islam nowhere tells us to be bad people in the society. Islam so much tells us like to be good to your neighbors, to be good to your, like to be good to everyone in the society. And once we practice them, nobody is going to feel that you are
Islam
not
is
civilized.
Not secular. Yeah. It's, you know, thinking of the community level at large. So when this person finds out about this value, of course, he'll be attracted himself.
Yeah.
Then he can be able to give that energy out that, you know, that I'm special.
Yeah.
And he'll be able to stand up. How many parents do you see when a child comes up and he says that, you know, I was, for example, bullied in school because I'm a Muslim. The parents don't come forward and,
yeah,
and complain.
Yeah.
They feel, okay, hide your religion at that point.
Hide your religion.
You know?
I have so much seen that happening because I personally come from India and we have so many less number of Shias from in the place where I lived. And even I unfortunately was told once by my parents that don't ever express that you're a Shia because people are going to tell you that, you know, they're going to tell you you do not come, you're a kafir, actually, because that's what is being propagated in the societies. So yes, we need to increase our knowledge. And as of now, like since I came to know about the religion of Shiism, as I got the marifat, the knowledge about the Shiism, I so much proudly feel like saying about this religion. So it's about increasing the knowledge.
Yeah. Not only that, it's also increasing the factor that of unity between the people.
Yeah.
You know, like through your manners, your etiquette, it should spell so much kindness and so much love that people should be attracted to your speech.
Attracted to your religion.
And you should, you know, make that community united. And there should be no hypocrisy because hypocrisy brings backwardness.
All right.
And unity brings advancement.
Yeah.
So as you are united, you know, as Muslims, you will see that people will see you as a strong body.
Yeah.
And you know, we all have du'as that just spell unity. If you go and see or even namaz, إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ سُبْحَانَ رَبِّيَ الْعَظِيمِ وَبِحَمْدِ سُبْحَانَ رَبِّيَ الْأَعْلَى وَبِحَمْدِ, you know, سَمِيَ اللَّهُ لِمَنْ, everything spells that we are together,
thing.
We are worshipping together.
Yeah.
And that's why jamaat is so much, congregation prayer is so much encouraged.
Encouraged. It's better than the 40 furada prayers, 40 prayers that we offer at home. And the concept of unity, you said, it's so much.
Yes.
Islam encourages that.
And not
yes.
only in our worships, you know, if you go and see when a person reads the historical, history of Islam, in the beginning of Islam, when Islam was spread, the Muslims were united and agreed on most of the issues according to the Quran, you know, according to the Quranic command, you know, Quran commands us to be brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were following that that ayat of the Holy Quran, that be brothers to you. They were actually following it. But after the demise of the Holy Prophet, some differences then arose, you see. In spite of this, Imam Ali alayhi salam and his sons used wise diplomacy and did not allow them to halt the progress of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
They became aloof from the usurpers of their rights because their desire was that at least the principles of Islam should remain.
All right.
You know? So now if you go and see, it's a hypocrisy and controversies between the, you know, different kinds of sects.
All
they
right.
want to come forward. They want to announce their things. They want to, you know, rival. Even the religious scholars sometimes, they say that my view is right and your view is wrong.
Exactly. You know, and we have this.
So this spells hypocrisy. And this brings the backwardness of a religion rather than the advancement.
And we have so many verses on that. Even Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him and his family, says that I am not afraid of a person who is a disbeliever. I'm afraid, I have fear of the one who is a disbeliever. Thank you so much, sister, for being with us. Our time is over for this session. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to the IRIB English Radio. To listen to that session again, you can go back to our website, parstoday.com, go to Call of Islam, email us your questions as well at the email englishradio@irib.ir. And in case you want to follow us on the social media platforms, you can just